The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Thursday's Greg Hughes Show here in Highland Radio. It's the 12th of March, 6 minutes past nine. You're very welcome along to the programme. I hope you're all very well indeed. It's good to have you on board, and we'll keep you informed and entertained over the next couple of hours, and we've got lots coming up on the programme. Some really interesting conversations. Some of it, at times, will be a tough listen, but still very important that we do. I'll tell you more about that a little later on. Once I remind you of how you get in contact with the programme. So if you want to talk about anything that we're talking about, raise your own issues, pass on your own stories, good or bad, 086 60 25000, that is our WhatsApp and text number. Alternatively, you can give us a call. Caroline is taking your calls today, assisted by Katie on 07 491 25000, or you can send us emails, comments@highlandradio.com. If you're listening to the podcast over the overnight replay, then please feel free to message in. We'll carry your messages over until the next live show. Today's the last day, as far as I'm aware, of Mr. Michael Sugrue at Letterkenny University Hospital. He's been there for 18 years, and an awful lot has changed over the last 18 years, and his hand has been on the tiller for much of that. But his story goes far beyond Letterkenny. He's a very interesting man. He's got a massive love of poetry, of his pets, of the outdoors, not poetry, poetry, but also photography. He spent 20 years in Australia and studied in Galway originally. And he was the subject of a podcast, last week's podcast, the Greg Hughes podcast, the sister podcast to this show. And the video of that podcast went up last night, by the way, on our socials. So if you want to watch back at your leisure, not while I'm on air doing it live, but later on, please feel free to do so. And this week's podcast out today at 11. We've brought it forward today because we're including much of it on this programme. And that's an interview with Louise James. And it is one of the toughest interviews I have done, because Louise describes the loss of five family members in the Buncrana Pier tragedy. It is the anniversary, the 10th anniversary of that tomorrow. And it's just unimaginable that anyone should go through that. But it is a story, too, of grief, of trauma, but of hope, of living, of moving forward. And, you know, we often feel that life's tough. And it is. Life is tough, and toughness is relative, subjective. But, you know, maybe listening to that interview might help you realise that, you know, if someone can overcome that, or at least learn to live with that and move forward with it, probably a better way of describing it, well, maybe then there's hope for the rest of us. That's going to be coming up in the second hour. And also, too, we're going to be speaking about and this is just an absolute coincidence of timing, national campaign for the safety of peers around the country as well, because in relation to the Buncrana pier tragedy, it was mentioned in evidence that the pier was slippy, that there was algae on it. A representative of Audi stated that it would have been very difficult for the car to grip on it, regardless of whatever car it might have been. It wasn't gated, and there was very little signage there. So that was evidence given at that inquest. And as I say, just by coincidence, there's another lady speaking from outside of this region who lost her father in a tragedy around a pier down the country. So as I say, it's just by pure coincidence two stories that are somewhat intertwined in terms of peers and peer safety. That's all coming up on the programme, so please stay tuned for that. Let's go to the newspapers. The Tyrconnell Tribune, John McAteer, pulls no punches in his headline, "Rip off Republic as government rakes in 65% on fuels." And last night, or yesterday, it's funny how quickly these things change. There seemed to be a little bit of hope in terms of fuel prices. And some garages, fair play to them, were quite quick to bring them down because the price of a barrel of oil dropped. Well, lo and behold, two tankers were attacked in the Middle East overnight. Oil back over 100 euro per barrel. That's the kind of world we're living in now. Well, reading on from this article on the front of the paper, with the price of diesel now past 2.20 a litre, filling stations have been told by wholesalers that further increases are imminent. In enterprises that are heavily dependent on diesel, the fear is that it will hit 250 before there is any intervention by the government, or else rationing is a possibility. Government ministers have kept using the mantra about the huge benefits that social welfare recipients and low-paid sector were given in Budget 26. However, as with most government spin, John says, the reality is very different. On to the Donegal News, and they mark the 10th anniversary of the Buncrana pier tragedy. In today's Donegal News, they speak to Louise James, a mother who lost five family members in the Buncrana pier tragedy almost a decade ago. The Derry News this morning, man charged with kidnapping a man who was found wandering naked near the border, said he had been kidnapped, tied up, questioned and sprayed with bleach, Derry Magistrates Court has been told. Eamon McDade, 33, of Westway in Derry, appeared charged with a number of offences that were said to have occurred on October 1st last year. He was charged with abducting a man, attempted grievous bodily harm with intent, false imprisonment, assault and administering poison or a noxious substance against the same person. He was also charged with possessing a firearm with intent to cause fear, possessing drugs, stealing household items and entering a premises as a trespasser again on the same day. A police officer connected the accused to the charges and deposed bail. On to the Farmers' Journal, and of course, it's crazy, isn't it? But when oil goes up, anything plastic goes up, or anything that is derived from it or uses it in its production, fertiliser skyrocketing, silage costs up as well. The cost of making a round bale of silage is set to increase by €1.20 per bale as the impact of the war in Iran kicks in. There was huge volatility in the price of oil this week, with Brent crude oil surging to over $116 a barrel on Monday before falling back to just over €90 a barrel yesterday. These prices are up over 50% compared to the price of oil in the 6 months prior to February, when the US started to prepare for the attack on Iran. And they went back up over the 100 this morning. And the reason why is covered in the Nationals as well. Iran warns world to prepare for soaring oil prices. Iran has warned the world should prepare for surging energy prices as its forces hit merchant ships. The warnings come as the International Energy Agency recommended a large release of strategic reserves to dampen one of the worst oil shocks since the 1970s. Three commercial ships were hit by projectiles in the Strait of Hormuz, and Iran launched fresh strikes against its oil exporting neighbours, warning that crude oil prices could rise to $200 a barrel. Any vessel whose oil cargo or the vessel itself belongs to the United States, the Zionist regime or their hostile allies will be considered legitimate targets, the Iranian military said. Could we be making friends with Russia again in an attempt to maybe see the pressure relieved from there? By the way, it's very important to mention that there was a horrific incident. There's many horrific instances in this war, but one was from the US, and they killed 170 children and 14 teachers. And there was no need for that to happen because the US used outdated intelligence to carry out a missile attack that struck an Iranian school. The Pentagon is investigating the strike, which, as I mentioned, killed about 170 children, many under 12, and 14 teachers. This according to Iranian state media, but it's been widely reported it's not being labelled as propaganda. Evidence is mounting that the US was responsible for the attack on the school in Minab, southern Iran, on February 28th, which has prompted international condemnation. Fragments of an American Tomahawk missile were found on site, which is next to an Iranian naval base. 170 children wiped from the face of the planet by the United States. And Micheál Martin is going over to meet the man ultimately responsible for that. Ireland is set to highlight €6 billion in planned investment as part of a charm offensive on Donald Trump at this year's St. Patrick's Day's activity. This is in the Irish Daily Mail. Micheál Martin will travel first to Philadelphia and then on to Washington, D.C. as part of the trip to meet the U.S. president on March 17th in the Oval Office. While the Taoiseach has come under pressure from left-wing members of the opposition not to attend the annual event in the White House due to the US role in the genocide in Gaza and its more recent war in Iran alongside Israel. It appears instead that the government will double down on its engagement with Mr. Trump. The news has been hailed by Mr. Trump's administration, with White House spokesman Kush Deze declaring, "World leaders used to come to the White House and walk away with billions in tax-funded freebies. Now they're bringing trade and investment deals because they know President Trump means business and that America, under its leadership, is the hottest country in the world." €6 billion of investment Micheál Martin is going to be bringing that man on March 17th. In your name too, by the way. Unsavoury scenes at Cheltenham. Some people think the mere act of horse racing is unsavoury. But Declan Queeley has levelled accusations of mistreatment and anti-Irish abuse against Nico de Bonneville following a heated exchange at the start of the Turner's Novice Hurdle during the Cheltenham Festival. Queeley, who also trains All Sort, that finished fifth, whilst de Bonneville secured second place on Act of Innocence. Both were outpaced by Willie Mullins' winning horse King Rasco Grey. However, the race was marred by controversy from the outset, with several false starts as the judges vied for positions. ITV's Matt Chapman managed to catch up with the jockeys as they made their way to the weighing room post-race, and Queeley seemed to have been subjected to xenophobic abuse. And if you listen to the accent of the fellow that was dishing it out, have you ever gone to the wrong place? I have, very recently, well, relatively recently, a couple of years ago. We were over in London. It was for that vintage day. I think it was for that anyway. No, it might have been for something else. I can't recall, which probably that's cognitive decline led to my problem. So we went into London for a quick look around. You know, there's Westminster, there's the big wheel. All right, let's go. And we decided to return to our hotel. But I took control of directions because, you know, that's just the kind of guy I am. And what I didn't realise is there were multiple hotels with the same name, so we ended up on the wrong side of London, and it was all my fault, and it was all very stressful. As you can imagine, that was bad enough. And I saw every stop on the London Tube, I cannot deny that. But not as bad as this Barcelona fan who wanted to see his side play at Newcastle. He went to the wrong St James's Park, 366 miles away in Exeter. The gutted supporter had a ticket to see the Spanish Giants in a huge Champions League match, but ended up watching a League One clash instead. So we got a game of football. But anyway, 366 miles. Is that the record for turning up at the wrong place? I'm sure we've all made the mistake at some point with sat-nav. It's just not normally as catastrophic as that, is it? Tony Monaghan is the regeneration officer with Derry City and Strabane District Council, and he joins us now. Good morning to you, Tony.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for having the time to speak to us today. Right. So we've spoken in the past on this programme about Strabane's £7 million public realm improvement plan for the town centre. And they're not stagnant, are they? They are moving forward. Firstly, for those just catching up, what's proposed and at what stage are we at in...
Yeah, well, thank you, Greg. Yeah, well, firstly, what's proposed? Council has secured funding from the Department for Communities. We're looking at a £7 million investment into the town centre, an investment that we believe will be transformative in terms of changing the streetscapes in and around the town centre. So effectively, the public realm project involves us creating and new footpaths, new footway surfaces, new road surfaces, new street lighting, and also... new street furniture as well. The streets that we're focusing in on in and around Strabane Town Centre are Abercorn Square, Butcher Street, Castle Street, Upper Main Street and Market Street. So you can see even from those list of streets that it's a fairly comprehensive project, and indeed one which we believe will have significant positive impacts as well in terms of addressing some of the challenges and issues that are in the town centre at the moment in terms of some of the street furniture is tired, some of the streetscapes are tired, and clearly what we want to do now is really refresh that through this £7 million investment.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's multiply pronged. I was going to say two pronged, but it's about improving the life and work experience of people in Strabane and surrounds, but of course also too, it makes it a more attractive place for people to move to or to invest in.
Yeah, well, very much so, you know, because clearly, you know, obviously investing in public realm is important because it's about supporting local businesses and obviously how they grow, also helping to make it an attractive place that will attract people and create more footfall. So really there are multiple benefits through this type of investment, and we're just so pleased now to be at a point where we're going on site very shortly, because obviously this project has been in the pipeline for quite a number of years, and obviously we've had to work through various processes, and we've seen over that time the budget increasing due to construction inflation and just typical economical challenges like that. But that said, the council along with Department for Communities have been really committed to getting this project to the point now where we're literally about to hit the ground and get on with the project, you know.
Yeah, and with that in mind, you don't want there to be any information gaps, do you? 2 weeks today, there is a public information session for presumably, you know, residents and business owners. It's in the Strabane Library Civic Room, and it runs from 2:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. So I presume there'll be visuals there, but also staff on site to answer any questions.
Yes, there will be, Greg. Thursday the 26th, we're embarking upon a public consultation or public engagement session and where we're inviting members of the public, if they want to walk in, have a look at what the plans are. That way we'll be able to actually inform where the programme in terms of what streets we'll be targeting first and things like that. So it's just a general information session for the public, and that starts at 2:30 p.m. in Strabane Library and runs to 7 o'clock on Thursday 26th. But just before that, between 12:30 p.m. and 2:30 p.m, we're also having a dedicated session for local businesses as well. So those with business interests in the town who want to ask particular questions or say, well, how does this impact on me, et cetera, et cetera, we'll have a number of staff and some of our contractor and our designers there just to answer those questions. But I think really, Greg, you know, we're at that point now where, and we're so pleased that we're at the point where we are, our contractor has been appointed at FP McCann's, and they are intending to start the project, physically start works in May of this year. So we're really looking now in 2 months' time, we'll be on the ground with a presence, which is great.
How long do you think the works will take?
Well, the work is programmed to take in and around 16 to 18 months. And obviously it'll be done on a phased basis, Greg. So therefore, obviously, you know, the whole essence of us having the information session is to highlight to, I suppose, the public and indeed local businesses, what parts of the town will be starting in first and then moving on to the next section. So effectively, yeah, it's a but again, you see, the programme, as I say, is in and around 16 to 18 months. And clearly we're hoping we can deliver it a lot sooner than that, but that is the programme that we have for now.
That's it. All right, brilliant stuff. So that's the next date for the diary, really, in relation to this development is March 26th at the Strabane Library Civic Room. And also, too, obviously, you'll start seeing some activity on the ground, which is always good with projects when they finally begin. Right, thanks very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
Look after yourself. Okay. So that'll be nice, I would hope. That's Tony Monaghan there, Regeneration Officer with Derry City and Strabane District Council. Right, lots of contacts about traffic in and around Letterkenny today. What are causing the traffic delays? Well, a caller says there is a stop-go at the roundabout at Windy Hall in Letterkenny, which is causing a massive traffic delay in the town. Why are these allowed to happen while people are trying to get to work? Surely these should only start after 9 a.m. Another morning, any idea what's causing major traffic delays on the mountaintop? Just reference that for you. On the issues of piers, I find the pier in Killybegs absolutely frightening. The road leads you down that way too. Then you have to reverse turn on the pier itself. I'm trying to think which pier that might be. I think I know where you're talking about. Another caller says, Donegal County Council Transport Infrastructure Ireland, not fit for purpose, spent over €10 million on the road from the Clanree to the Polestar roundabout. No real improvement for motorists, they say. Go to work or shoppers. No improvement for motorists going to work or shoppers in their car. Money wasted by the above, this listener says. I understand one lane going from Mount Errigal to George E. Sweeney's each way in the near future. More traffic jams. The road is working fine the way it is. The same people destroyed the centre of Milford in the process of destroying Remelton with one-way streets for cars being introduced and less parking. What a joke these are. So in future, I'll not be voting in protest. I'm not sure about the... is Milford controversial? That junction in Milford just... between the schools in Milford is crazy. That needs sorting out. And there's collisions there very, very regularly. It's a terrible junction. But Milford, the one-way system, did that destroy the town? But also, too, you see the reason they're doing all this work in Letterkenny is so that you can cycle into Letterkenny and cycle to your hospital appointment and work. Is that, that makes sense, doesn't it? It's all part of active travel, don't you know? Right, the long-awaited works at Buncrana Community Hospital were meant to begin in June last year, then September, then early this year, and it looks like they're being pushed back again towards the end of this year. Very disappointing, and I'm sure Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, Sinn Féin's Chief Whip and Spokesperson on Fisheries and the Mean, will agree. Good morning to you, Padraig.
Good morning, Greg. Yeah, I have to say it's... When I got this letter yesterday and been working with my colleague, Councillor Jack Murray, on this now for quite a while, I was sick in my stomach because a local woman had said to me weeks ago, you may know, you'll recall, Greg, that we were told last year when families were moved out and it was dragging on that it would start in early 2026. That was what it said in writing, early 2026. We relayed that to the local community, and naturally people were very angry that their families had been moved out, and why were they moved out if it was going to be 7 or 8 months? So a local woman had concerned about this, had said to me she had received information that this tender isn't over the line, this isn't sorted. And I says, well, they've given us a written guarantee that it'd be early 2026. Listen, I'll write to the HSC again, looking for an update. The update took weeks to get, and it's confirmed with this woman, the information that she had. And I'm just shocked as a public representative that's, like, we weren't kept abreast of this, that these delays, apparently they're changing design. I can't understand how this happens. I mean, if you're moving residents out to Nazareth House and Fawn, to Carindonagh Community Hospital, I mean, surely you have your I's dotted and T's crossed. Why are you changing? Why is the HICWA coming in, changing this, changing that, dragging it on and on? Mm-hmm. So there's real anger in the local community and indeed distrust and concern about the unit, as we would call it.
We were speaking yesterday to the principal, or this week, to the principal of Little Angels School. And it's a fantastic new facility, but it was in planning and building for so long that really it's just not big enough. It was opened, not fit really to meet the demand. Is there any danger that the foot dragging and the delays in this project could have the same consequences, that what is actually delivered doesn't meet the needs of the community?
Absolutely, Greg. And this is such an important question, and for people out there to understand. HICWA came in and looked at Buncrana and Carindonagh Community Hospitals units and said that they're not up to the standards required, and they recommended significant works. But unfortunately, at that time, a number of years ago, when it was agreed to do it, the government had a freeze on additional beds in place. So there's no additional beds whatsoever. Like, this is a complete missed opportunity in Carindonagh and Buncrana. I'm told that we may actually lose beds in Buncrana with the completed project. So it is really, really frustrating.
And but I mean, Is that not a misuse of public funds, though? Because, you know, the HSC is charged with spending that money responsibly, and I'm sure the Minister for Health is of that view as well. Spending an awful lot of money to deliver less than that was there before, or to not meet the needs going forward, that's a bad use of money.
Yes, it is. And I had raised this at the time. I couldn't understand why. I'd seen it as an absolute missed opportunity. Welcome the upgrading of the two, they're called community hospitals now, we would have called them nursing units back in the day. Welcome the upgrading of them. But why are we not adding additional beds? And just something I discovered recently, Greg, is that I'd asked from 2007 to 2026, I wanted to know the number of beds in community hospitals across Donegal, from Ballyshannon right up to Carindonagh and Remelton. I wanted to know how many beds were there in 2007, how many are there today. And I can tell you right now, we have 1 in 4 beds lost in our community hospitals. 1 in 4 beds lost. So when we build this Letterkenny Hospital, which is really welcome, it's only playing catch up. So people need to understand this isn't some huge surge forward in beds. We are only catching up, and we won't even catch up with the number of beds we had in 2007. And that's willful neglect. We know our population is aging. We know that people like to have their loved ones close to us in our communities. It's so important to
But
people.
it
Like,
is
that's the thing I'm
possible as well, though, is it not, that those people, the one in four people that aren't in a community hospital bed, are at home where they might prefer to be, in a, with increased spending in home care packages?
Well, my opinion is there was a push towards privatisation, away from community-based care. And like, remember, in places like Buncrana and, all across Donegal, people had raised money themselves. Like, this came from the community. They had raised the money to build these units, and then the state came in behind them, and that was the principle of them. In my view, there was a move to privatisation. But also, I mean, if you talk, and there's nobody more tuned to the community, Greg, through your show in Donegal, you hear about this all the time. There are people who are desperately trying to find a place for their loved ones. They've got to a point in the care cycle that unfortunately they can't be cared for in their home anymore, and they're desperately trying to find a place. That is the case around Inishowen now for quite a while, and it's a case across Donegal.
What is HICWA's role in all of this? I'm sure HICWA does great work in terms of improving safety, fire doors and all that kind of stuff, and beyond that. But every time I hear those four letters in association with this type of a conversation, it's about a unit being closed, it's about a unit being made smaller, it's about beds being lost. That's surely not what HICWA was designed for, or perhaps it was.
Well, I mean, if somebody's saying, we want the best possible care and standards and, toilets and ensuite, and as you say, doors, and that's fine, but we need additional capacity. That's our fundamental need, and absolutely we want our loved ones to be in a lovely setting, not just for the patients, but also for the staff, the nurses, the doctors, the cleaners, everybody who works in those settings. That's fine, but we need more capacity. That's the first thing that should happen. And it's not the problem with the HSE and HICWA and all of these things, they're just not joined up. So you establish HICWA because of failings in the past. They come along, they set the standards, but you don't have the resources then to do the capacity that's needed. And like, it's really, really sickening that we're left with the legacy of a decision made 10 years ago. This has been delayed and delayed and delayed. And we're now having a unit where we may actually lose beds from where we were in the past.
But the problem we have now, if you push that agenda, if not you, that this could further delay the project, right? So that means, well, we have to go back to the drawing board. We'd have to resubmit planning applications. So instead of the best case scenario of this facility be delivered in 2 years, it'd be 3 years, 4 years. Would that delay be worth the additional capacity? Because every egg has to be cracked to make an omelette.
Yeah, again, Greg, you're hitting the nail on the head. For me, a number of years ago, I made that decision that I needed this project to go ahead, get done. I didn't want to delay it any further. It had been delayed long enough, but I'm starting to regret it now, because we're looking at late 2026 anyway, and another 18 months. They're now not saying 12 to 18 months. They're now saying 18 months. That's 2 years now before we'll be able to have our new nursing unit. And you just wonder if the fight should have been happening number of years ago, but we weren't to know. We couldn't have known that this would drag on and on. And like so much in this country, Greg, by the time it's done, it's just taken so damn long, it's out of date, and people have lost interest and lost heart in it.
Right. You're calling for urgency and leadership, presumably from within the HSE locally. Has it been made clear, answer this part and then the second part first. Has it been made clear actually what is leading to these consecutive delays? Maybe you've addressed that, but I mean, is it clear what the problem is?
Well, the last year we were told that there were changes to the design brought in by the regulator. Okay, now I assume that's HICWA or whatever. Mm. But the latest one now is that it's still at pre-tender approval. And I'll just read out what it says. This project will continue to progress in line with the infrastructure guidelines and the capital works management framework. The project will proceed to the second stage of tender upon completion of the review and approval processes in accordance with the infrastructure guidelines and with construction activities to commence thereafter. A lot of, obviously, bureaucratic jargon.
I think the kids call that word salad.
Yeah, it's just like, it's basically, we're making a hames of this. We're chopping and changing. We haven't sorted out the tender. We're not, and in the capital, this as you know, the HSE is so many different departments, but within the capital design section, that's who I blame for this. I cannot understand when they start moving residents out of that place when they weren't certain that works were starting
Yeah,
within weeks. I
that
don't
is,
understand it.
and what the net result of that is, and people know what we're talking about here because they know it's happening and they know it hurts, and they often then do try and come up with alternatives. This means many people's loved ones are miles away, which means those daily visits or even weekly visits can become awkward, dependent on people's transport needs. We'll see if we can get. We'll contact the HSC. We already have. I presume we'll get back the press statement outlining what you've just outlined for us. But anyway, we all have to keep the pressure on. For now, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks so much, Greg. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Goodbye. That's Sinn Féin's Chief Whip, the party's Chief Whip, also the spokesperson on fisheries and the marine, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. A caller says, once again, we're failing our elderly miserably. Come on, it's all about the new unit open in Letterkenny. I mean, the plans are afoot for this development. The focus obviously is going to be on Letterkenny for a while. None of us would be here without the older generation. And some of the people in these facilities aren't very old either. But when you fail older people, when you fail those that gave us the life that we have, it's a very poor reflection on society. You know, the sick, the vulnerable, the old, they don't always overlap, by the way. A lot of old people are in great health, thankfully. But it's how we treat them and how we respect them. And it's not good if we're not doing that. Tony Forrester is the CEO of Letterkenny Chamber and has, I have to say, dialed down the apparel. Oh no! Here we go. There, the hat's still there.
If I really must.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen. We're looking for people to get into the spirit, so you need to get into the spirit. The scarf's a lovely touch, though. I must say.
I thought I would be more sophisticated this year, but no.
No, no. Hey, who said a massive hat on your head's not sophisticated? Have you been Cheltenham? No. You would stroll through Cheltenham, and everyone would say you're the best ladies' day. Come here. Big plans for St. Patrick's Day in Letterkenny. And we're going to throw out the phone lines for the rest of the county too, to plug what's coming up there. All the entertainment on Tuesday, Tony.
Yeah, so we start at 1:30. We have some bands. We have Cal McKevney at McGettigan's Hotel on the street. We have Mark McLean at Blake's Bar. And on the main stage, we have Joe Gibson and a bit more entertainment. You have dancers and things like that. And then we have a young person, Kendra Ponsonby, who's going to sing the national anthem for us. So we did this a few years ago and we haven't done it for a wee while. So we thought that was a nice touch. And the parade this year is being led by the Little Blue Heroes Foundation. Very close to everybody's heart here in Donegal. And we're delighted to have them. They are so excited.
Now, there are still spaces for floats, which is very exciting. And there are also great prizes as an incentive. So if you haven't yet got your float entered, it's actually not too late. And you do have quite a bit of time to work on it as well. I know it might seem like short on time, but what do you need? A bit of bunting, a flatbed and a sign, you know?
Yeah, you don't even need a flatbed.
No.
You don't even need a flatbed. So
you could just walk.
We always say to people, as long as you have a bit of colour, a bit of fun, walking entries are just as good as big floats, you know, big lorries.
Of course they are,
so,
yeah.
We would love everybody to join in the fun. I did see that somebody's putting in a massive St. Patrick on the back of a lorry that looks amazing.
Yeah.
And hopefully he's coming to us. But and we all have our normal ones. You know, we have our dance troops, we have the sporting clubs, tournaments, unions, you know, all of those kind of people come along. And some residence groups are coming this year. And it's just fun.
It's
and
a lovely celebration of culture and of fun.
In Ireland, it's traditional parade. It's not a big Dublin fancy Mardi Gras. It's just a good parade. It's great fun. We get thousands and thousands of people on the street. We have a photo booth as well at the market centre near the stage. So everybody can go and get a little commemorative photograph. And we're delighted this year. I have to give a wee shout out, I always do, to our businesses. We have to fund the parade, but it's really our businesses that fund it. So Phillips Medisize have come in this year as our overall sponsor.
Brilliant.
We've got lots of other sponsors and they're all out on our social media. But without the businesses giving us, you know, anything from €50 up, we wouldn't be able to do it. So it's
Yeah.
a real team effort, you know, to be
Of course
fair.
it is. And I don't want to commercialize it too much, but let me put it to the people who may not have entered a float, and that could be a walking float or a van or whatever it might be. You're looking at an opportunity to have thousands upon thousands of eyes on your product or your service or whatever it might be. So it really is a wonderful opportunity. And there are still some slots available for you. And there are also fantastic prizes for different entries. So, I mean, obviously, look, you know, you have to have different categories, so it's fair. So the entertainment on the day starts at 1:30 on the main street. Joe Gibson performing live on the main stage in the Market Square. The parade starts at 3 p.m. sharp. Obviously, there's going to be traffic restrictions in place. Follow the guidance of Gardaí; they'll keep you straight. And also for people with limited mobility or reduced mobility, they will be accommodated as best as possible, as always. So, if people want to get involved, how do they do so?
So give us a call in the office here, 0749 124 866. We can send a form out, but just even to let us know you're going to come, so that really helps. So we can organize things a little bit at the bottom of the road. It's a long parade, you know, it does go on quite a while. Most people who come every year know what to do. But we love to be able to contact people and say, this is exactly where you need to be at any given time.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
just give us a wee shout here in the chamber and we will get you sorted.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Tony, and thank you for making the effort. You always look great. Look after
Right.
yourself. That's Tony Forrester there, who is, of course, of the Letterkenny Chamber, the CEO, in fact. Get involved. Why not? It'll be a bit of crack. Mary T. Sweeney is getting involved. Mary T., good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
How are
It's very
they?
exciting.
Huh?
It's very exciting. I'm looking at the rain bucketing down and feeling for everybody preparing frames and ropes and everything that's going on this weekend's weather forecast.
Right, you're looking for some assistance in entering your float, is it?
Yes. Yes, that's what it is. I'm involved with the Paris Pastoral Council. Very privileged to be on the Pastoral Council here in Letterkenny. And we are the creators of the big, massive St. Patrick that's going down the streets, or please, hopefully, the
Ah,
wind
this is
doesn't
the St.
move.
Patrick that Tony referenced. Okay, go
Yes,
on.
this is St. Patrick. And what I have, I've sent a photograph to Caroline there, that very kind of Johnny Joe McCollum, this local historian, and Gaby Flood, who are working on trying to get me names of the local families that came to town to be involved in the building of the cathedral, because it's also the jubilee year of Letterkenny Cathedral being built. So it's 125 years of our cathedral. So in combination with our St. Patrick's Day float, we've actually incorporated the recognition of this jubilee of the cathedral. And we're inviting one member from the different families at least to come and join us in costume from 1901, off the trade that your family was involved with in the construction of the cathedral. And you have names coming up like Mount Charlotte Stone. I'm going to reach out to them today. You'd have McDevitt's over in Glenties who contributed. And then you've all the stonemasons. And already I've met by getting looking for props for the float. I met one of the Macaulay girls out from she's Gallagher now, out from we call it the Thorn. And didn't it turn out their family, John Baird was able to tell me that their family, the gravel all came in from where they live along the river. And so she had knowledge of that. So hopefully one of her family is going to come in and join us. And likewise, the Macleays, the engineers, the architects were from Dublin, but the main contract was Maclay from Strabane. So I'm reaching out, and I know the McInerneys locally were tied to the Maclay, so I'm hoping it's the same family connection. I hope to reach out to them today.
All
If
right.
anybody out there listening, please come back, get on to me. Caroline will give them the
We'll
number.
pass on the details. I would love to show a picture that you sent in, but Caroline has a bit of a reputation for deleting messages that she sent. She's actually started deleting her own messages now, but I will show that picture.
It's
It's
a
not in the
fabulous tour.
WhatsApp, Caroline. I can't see it. But anyway, we'll not row on air. Mary T, so people can contact us and we can pass on your details. You're happy enough with that?
We have the history, a whole history of St. Patrick, putting Patrick back under our float as well, and commemorating at the same time our cathedral being constructed by people, and really interesting history.
Yeah, I owe Caroline an apology. I do see the picture here and I will put it out a little later on. Listen, thank you very much. Looking forward to hopefully now this weather, it's exhausting itself for Tuesday. That's the only thing we can hope for.
Hopefully.
Okay, fingers
Bring
crossed.
your rain gears. Bring your rain gear.
Exactly. It's not. It. There's no such thing as bad weather, is it? If we have the right outfit.
Not at all.
Bye bye, Mary T. That's Mary T. Sweeney there. 086 60 25,000 is our WhatsApp and text number. Let me see if I can get that picture up. It is. It's a very historic looking picture. Let me see. How do I do this again? If I do that, that doubles that up, and then I can do this, and there, that's the picture there. Wow. I wonder, has that been colourised or is that an original colour picture? Anyway, really quite remarkable. If you're watching, if you're not watching, we'll put it up on our socials, by the way. I'm not excluding anyone. Right, give us a call either, by the way. I mentioned the WhatsApp and text number 074 91 25,000. A caller says, the sad thing about the nursing unit in Buncrana is the patients in it today are people who fought originally years ago to have such an establishment locally. And it's them same people who are being let down now. But remember, we are in Inishowen and Donegal, and it's us who are being let down time and time again. Thank you. And I understand where you're coming from, but that's, we're here to give you a voice as well, by the way. And I hope that comes across. Traffic delays, chaotic traffic again. Glencar Road Hospital roundabout, 50 minutes from the Gaelscoil to Ballyrain Pharmacy Hospital roundabout, bumper to bumper. How is an ambulance meant to get to the hospital? Nobody in Letterkenny this morning is on time for work, school. Shame on DCC and hospital appointments as well. It's a big thing when you have the our only acute hospital in the heart of this traffic. It is problematic. Greg, we're stuck on the high road for the past half an hour and we are late for chemo. That's a perfect example of that. I'm sorry. I know how stressful that is as well. I really am sorry you're going through that. The approach to Knocknamona roundabout in Letterkenny this morning is blocked by bad drivers. Why can the council not put in a yellow box there to stop cars blocking traffic going up towards Mountaintop? I hear you, and I'm not sure exactly of the scenario you talk of, but there comes a point in roundabouts that if you don't encroach onto it, you really will never get to where you're going. If there's incredibly heavy traffic and it's going around the roundabout, again, I understand where you're coming from with yellow boxes, but there comes a point, and it might suit you for that traffic to stop, but if they don't start to move out, they will never ever get to where they're going, and they could be waiting to get to the hospital for chemo as well. So we have to just keep that in mind. In regards to the hospitals, Deputy McLaughlin is perfectly right. The exact same happened here in Dunloe. They had closed beds and then they closed even more. Another says, an absolute disgrace. How can this be allowed to happen? 12 months later, there are empty rooms lying vacant and we're in a crisis with long-term care homes. Yeah, a lot of people can't see the sense in it at all, at all. Question, why is HICWA insisting that is just one patient per room as opposed to the way it used to be with two or three per room? That's why capacity is down. I'm not sure of the ins and outs of it, but hey, progress, they might argue. Greg, the nursing unit in Buncrana, what it was originally called, consisted of inside and outside chalet and ward beds. The unit has been consistently downgraded over the years. The chalets were turned into offices and are now storage rooms. Keep them calls and comments coming through. They really do help paint a picture of the situation. Just to let you know that we've got this fantastic competition running here at Highland Radio at the moment, and it is a €10,000 home makeover plus €10,000 cash with a value of €20,000. It's the ultimate chance to transform your home. So you get €10,000 to spend with our associates, Foy and Company. They've got showrooms in Letterkenny, Ballybuffet and Enniskillen. And you can only imagine what you could do with 10 grand in your home. You know, lots of people, and I fear we're heading to a point now whereby we're not going to necessarily be moving homes for a while with the way the economy is going, that we might end up, you know, doing what we have done in the past. And that is doing up the homes that we're in, bringing new life and energy into them, from curtains to cushions to paints to chairs, everything. You can make a massive difference in multiple rooms for €10,000. And also, how about an extra 10 grand for your little back pocket? 10 grand in cash. It's all brought to you in association with, as I mentioned, Foy and Company, with showrooms in Letterkenny, Ballybuffet and Enniskillen. Now, to be in with a chance of winning this fantastic prize, it's the simple routine that we have. You go to highlandradio.com and you click win a home makeover, and there's a simple question because that's what you have to do, and then you choose your entry. Tickets are one for €15, which represents good value compared to what I see knocking about on the internet, or you can get them for a tenner if you buy five, so it's five tickets for €50. So maybe you want to group in with some siblings and get the tickets cheaper. It's completely up to you. Now, the draw takes place in the not too distant future, actually on Thursday the 2nd of April, and it's going to be broadcast live on John Bresson's Around the Northwest show. So if you want to win 10 grand to spend on your home in Foy & Company, showrooms, Letterkenny, Ballybuffet and Enniskillen, plus €10,000 in cash, well, then now is the time to get your tickets. Now, I will let you into a little bit of a secret here, as much as I feel I can divulge. There's going to be a little bit of extra sprinkles on this draw. And those little extra bit of sprinkles on that draw, which I imagine is going to happen, means that now's the time to get your ticket, because it means you'll be able to win the overall prize and all the sprinkles as well. Let me put it to you like that, right? You're clever people. You know what I'm talking about, I think. So I don't think I've given too much away, or everything away, I'm not sure. But get onto the website now, highlandradio.com, and you can win 10 grand to spend on your home or your office, in fact, for that matter, or your holiday home if you're lucky enough. Indeed, it's not a choice. You get both 10 grand in cash, 10 grand to spend in Foy & Company. You can give us a call too here at the radio station, 07491 25000, to get your tickets. As I mentioned, there'll be sprinkles, and you want to be in now to have all of those, have a chance of winning all of those sprinkles, right? So give us a call, 07491 25000. We can process your tickets safe and secure over the phone line, or it's also safe and secure at our website, highlandradio.com. This kind of a comment, I think, talks to, and I mean this with absolute respect to you, Texter, insecurity, and also maybe being brainwashed as to what the country we live in is. Because I said St. Patrick's Day is about celebrating culture, and I think I said our culture, but let's just say I didn't say culture. And of course, it's the culture of this country. It's the green, white and gold. There's a big push for Irish to be used in the shop windows, to be used as part of the parade. It's celebrating GAA, the football. It's celebrating hurling, camogie. It's celebrating Irish businesses. But this caller says, good morning, Greg. It's not a parade of culture. It's a parade of Irish culture. No one else. Let's keep our parades Irish. Remember, it's our culture. We are celebrating. Of course, it's our culture. But we are a rich country of all different cultures, and we've always been that way. So please don't let people influence you otherwise. It's 10 years since the Buncrana Pier tragedy. Mark McGrotty, 12, Evan McGrotty, 8, their father, and Louise James's partner, Sean McGrotty, 49, and her mother, Ruth Daniels, 57, and Louise's sister, Jodie Lee Daniels, aged just 14, died when their family car went into Lough Swilly from a slipway on March 20th, 2016. So we're approaching, the 10-year anniversary. And it is a tragedy almost beyond words. But there's an incredibly important story in here. And I sat down with a chat with Louise James recently to talk about that day, to talk about the last 10 years. It's a conversation really of absolute grief, trauma, but of hope, of resilience, and of a future. It'll be released as a podcast later, but here is that conversation I had with Louise.
Louise James, thank you very much for joining us. How are you keeping?
Okay.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
We're speaking 10 years after this awful tragedy, a tragedy that's of the scale that it, for you, but even for those of us watching on, it seems almost unbelievable that something so terrible could happen.
I know. It has it. It feels like it happened yesterday. It feels like a blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. But it's a hard one to swallow.
As much as you're comfortable talking about it, take us back to that day and how your day unfolded for you.
Oh, really? Okay. So I got up that morning and phoned Sean, and I just felt like, you know, I just felt like something was going to happen. You know, I just felt like something was wrong. And he reassured me everything was grand and for me to enjoy myself and that I'd be home that night and everything would be grand. But it didn't leave me. I just had this awful gut feeling that I needed to get home. So when we left, we fast forward undo the town. I phoned Jodie, chatting away there on the phone. And she had told me that Sean was coming to get her to pick her up for dinner. They were going for dinner, and so that was fine. We were at the airport, and I had phoned Sean, and there was no answer, so I phoned Jodie to tell her that my flight had been delayed for an hour. And it was grand. We chatted away there on the phone, and the boys came on, and I was chatting to them. Sorry, my voice.
No, that's okay.
So, hold on. Yeah, so.
You were chatting to them, and I just want to go back to that. Was it a gut feeling, a sixth sense or something? Had you had that before?
Not, I would get it, but not as strong as what I had it that day. So when I was chatting to Jodie, you know, Mark came on and told me he loved me and did I buy him anything? And then Evan came on and he told me he couldn't wait to get home. He wanted to give me a hug. And if he was sleeping when I came home, would I wake him up to give him a hug? And I said, of course I will. And I said, tell Daddy to give you the bath. And he said, he's not cutting my nails. Will you trim them when you come home? I don't want him to cut my nails. And I said, I will, sweetheart. And then I told Jodie to look after them. They all told me they loved me. I told them I loved them. And I said, I'll see you when I get home. And we hung up, and about 15 minutes later, I had like somebody had put their hand into my chest and ripped my heart out.
And that was before you'd heard the news?
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. Where does that come from? Is it spiritual? Is it just a parental or maternal connection? Or
I don't
is
know.
It faith-based? Or?
Well, it could be a combination of all three. Yeah. You know, I do have faith. And, yeah, it was a hard one. No, I tried to ring her back and the phone wouldn't connect. So I phoned my brother and it just took off from there. You know, everything unfolded then.
As a parent, listening to those final conversations, it's unimaginable.
Yeah.
Even the fact that you, as difficult as it is, that you can relate that... Does that bring you comfort, those final words?
Yeah, of course.
It does, yeah.
Because I was able to tell them that I loved them. Yeah. They told me that they loved me. They told me that they couldn't wait till I came home to see me. So, yeah, it's a wee bit of comfort to know that I did see them. But there's still a lot of guilt there with me, knowing that I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So that'll be...
Are you being fair to yourself there?
I don't think you are.
Yeah, but that's you, and you have, and maybe that's part of the whole web of emotions. So it's not up to anyone else to take that from you. But
no.
I do understand where you're coming from. How soon after that gut wrench, were you actually aware of the news and the extent of it? Because you know this was a tragedy on an all different scale.
Well, we got on the flight. I was on the phone to my brother Joshua, and he told me to turn my phone off. He just said, switch your phone off. There's been an accident in Bunkrana. Have you been on social media? And I said, no, because I had turned everything off to save my battery. And he said, right, go on, switch your phone off. Don't be on anything. And we get on the flight, and when the flight came on the land, the girl across from me had turned on her phone.
Right.
And I seen that it had said, black SUV, and I knew then. So
you knew that confirmed that feeling that you'd had.
So I ran. I get up and I just run. I just kept running. And when we got to the baggage where your bags come out, my phone was ringing, and as I was running, I was switching my phone on, and I answered it, and it was Joshua. And the first thing he said was, "Are you listening to me?" And I said, "Are they all gone?"
That's unbelievable.
And he said, "Yeah, but..." And at this stage, I dropped the phone and everything, and he had said to me, "Are you listening to me? Because Raina's in the hospital." And I said, "Is she okay?" And he goes, "I don't know anything yet. The police is here." He said, "And they've just said that they're gone, but you need to come home. Promise me." He said, "Promise me you'll meet me in Letterkenny." And I said, "Right, I will."
And you have clarity of that. You know, I don't know, maybe sometimes it's how the mind helps us. Sometimes we can block things like that. But you've got absolute clarity of how everything unfolded.
Yeah, love me forever.
Even to that lady switching on her phone, it all is part of this jigsaw of a story. When you got to Letterkenny, obviously, this was, just absolute confirmation of the news that you already knew.
Yes. So we went to see Raina first, and obviously she had the wee dummy, and I spoke about that on the Tommy Tiernan show, where she had the wee dummy, and it was confirmation for me, because my mum always talked about elephants being her sign, and the wee elephant was on the dummy. And then Mark Traynor, the guard that was in charge, and the doctor, they came in, and myself and my four brothers, we went to the morgue and we identified them. And that was tough.
Yeah, because to all intents and purposes, they probably looked like they were asleep.
Yeah, and, you know, you wanted to wake them up.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to take them home. I said to the doctor, "Can I just take them home, you know?" And they just sort of stood there and looked at me, but, you know, it's your babies at the end of the day.
And I think, too, you know, primarily it's what you're going through as well, but I'd imagine as much of the people in these hospitals deal with, or the emergency services, or the guards, this is one that will stay with them forever as well.
Yes.
How did Raina come to survive?
So when the car went down, there was a few people on the shore, the slipway. So David had swam in, and her father handed her out to David, and he swam back. And when he swam back, Connie and Teresa McIntyre was on the slipway along with all the emergency services, and helped her out, helped David out with Raina.
And how old is she now?
She's 10.
She's 10. And is there a wee journey you have to have with her emotionally as well?
Of course, yeah. I mean, she knows everything, you know.
Yeah.
She knows everything that happened. She knows it's her story too. You know, I tell her she's never to be afraid to ask questions. You know, when she does, she'll ask whatever she can. And
I suppose she has to understand sometimes there's not answers to those questions, and that's part of the whole process, isn't it?
Part of...
And then obviously, as anyone who's watching or listening to this, then, you know, you've the wakes and the funeral.
Yeah. And that's tough, you know, bringing them home. But in a way, it was nice because, as I said, I'll forever be grateful to David for saving her, for her father, for handing her out the window, because if it wasn't for Sean handing his daughter out the window, Davin wouldn't have been able to get her.
No, that's
shore,
part,
you know,
of the whole process.
You know,
isn't
so
it?
You know, she can be grateful to her daddy for that. Also, I have to be grateful to him, because if he hadn't done that, I wouldn't be here myself. You know, because I would have just ended my life too.
Yeah, because as hard as that is to say out loud, I mean, everything was taken from you.
Yeah, in the blink of an eye. So,
and without real, I mean, you can have inquests, you can have explanations, you can have reasons, but it doesn't really cover it, does it?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't cover the loss and the event.
No, and it never will. You know, as I've always said, I'll never move on. what we can learn to move forward, you know. And this is, this I know I've never spoke out in the last 10 years, and that's because I would have spoke to my friends and family and people that asked. I know I'm not afraid to talk about it. I just haven't spoke openly about it to TV, radio, or papers, because I felt like it was mine, and I needed to work through it for me to get the strength to actually say, right, now I'm ready. And now I'm ready.
Yeah, but also too, you had you had a lot to contend with too.
Yeah,
you know, you had a job to do. You had a job to do with yourself. You had a job to do with Raina, and there's other people in this story as well that aren't necessarily directly affected, but they're all part of it as
well. They are. Yeah.
The wake and the funeral in a loss, even a loss as severe as this, there's a process there, and we get through that, and there's ups and downs. But then obviously that's done. And what was it like for you at that point then too, where the last of the people left the house? I'm sure there was always people with you, right? But there's just this, right now, this is the new, what I'm going to have to deal with here.
It's hard because I had such a busy household, you know, two boys, and now this newborn baby, and Sean and myself, and Jodie would have came up and stayed a lot. They just having a 4-month-old baby, you know. So my brother moved on with me for a few months, and then when it was ready for him, he felt like he needed to move out and leave me. And even that was hard. You know, it was nearly like another wee bit of a loss, but he needed to find his feet too, you know.
But yeah, I suppose you didn't want to anchor him too much either.
You know, and I didn't want to, as much as he was my rock, I didn't want him feeling that I needed to rely on him.
Grief, right, grief or trauma has to be in here as well.
Yeah.
Grief and trauma are bedfellows, but they're not necessarily the same either.
No.
How did you cope, get through those early days? I presume rain is a big part of that story, right?
I felt like I just existed.
Yeah.
You know, say like your body's here, but your mind's not. You know, you just exist, and you just take one day at a time, or you just float through each day.
Yeah.
A while after, you know, it was hard too, because there was so much media attention and so many people wanting a story.
See, that's another thing that we forget about. We have a certain way here of dealing with things like that, and we take a step back, to be honest with you, because there's no advantage in us trampling on people's grief. And I'm not having to go at anyone else, I'm just saying that's the way it's at. But you are going to be conscious of that. You're going to be conscious of the talk, or even if there's a councillor comes out and says, you know, we need to review all the slips in the county or something like that there. That's actually really personal to this whole thing for you, isn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, which we, you know, it's worth considering. Day after day, so you day by day, did you have those moments whereby for a moment you forgot or didn't realise?
Yeah.
And then that second wave almost?
I remember the first time it happened was I didn't sleep. I didn't sit, my sleep pattern was off, it still is, but I didn't sleep for a long time. And I remember I'd fell asleep, and then I jumped up and ran to the back room and was like, oh, yous are late for school, you slept on. And then the beds are made and they're empty. And I remember sitting on the floor for about 2 hours crying, you know, just sitting there going, oh, yous aren't here.
Yeah, that's cruel, isn't it? Mm. That really is cruel. No one should ever, ever, ever have to do that.
You know, it's hard enough with one, but with the two of them, it was hard.
Yeah. Okay. And the persons that probably would be best placed to be there for you.
We're gone too.
So, at what stage did you have a bit of clarity that you could sort of move forward without this constant stop-start of life, or is it still the same?
Still the same.
Still the exact
still same.
Still
the same, yeah. You know, I mean, there's days you don't want to get out of your bed.
Mm.
There's days you don't want to leave the house. And that's okay. We're allowed to do that. That's part of grief. It's part of the grieving process. You can't stop yourself from doing it.
Mm.
Just don't stay there.
Do you think, really, I suppose, unless you've been in it, a lot of people think, well, time's a great healer, which
time is
a lot
of
nonsense,
healer.
Right? And that you'll get over it or you'll move past it. that's not really helpful, is it?
No.
You have to carry it with you. It has to be
yes,
part of you.
It's part of me.
Going forward.
You know, it is. It'll always be part of me.
Mm-hmm.
It'll never leave me. It is what it is.
Nor would you want the boys to leave you or your partner.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they are a big part of me.
So, 10 years is an anniversary, right? But there's anniversaries every which way you go, isn't there?
Yeah.
It could be something that's happened in school that you think I should be there.
Yeah.
It could be when you met your partner, Christmas, birthdays.
Yeah.
There must be like, it feel like it's three a month.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Every corner we turn, there's another one.
Yeah.
But what I done was, I didn't do anything for any of them because I feel guilty because if I do one, something for one, I feel like I need to do it for them all.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought, no, we'll do the walk on their 10th anniversary and we'll celebrate them all, we'll celebrate their life, and it'll be a nice, happy moment because they were playing in the park in Buncrana, and that's where I want to do it because that's where they were playing and they were laughing.
Yeah, and just in relation to grief and how you coped, it got harder.
Yeah.
Which is, can you put a finger on that as to why that is? Is it because maybe early on, everything was frozen in time, and
I think at the time you're existing, so you don't think about what you're actually going through.
Mm-hmm.
People, the community can be fantastic as well. Community is, your family's great too, you know, everybody's rallying around you and they're there, and then the door closes and everybody gets back to their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time moves on, they think, oh, well, they're all right. No, it's been 2 years. But for me, that third year, they seem to be the hardest.
How are you dealing with happy moments in your life, right? Because there has to be some too.
Yeah, of course there is.
Do you allow yourself, are you good at enjoying them, if you know what I mean?
I do. And then in my own space, I'll feel guilty for it.
Mm.
You know, I don't show it at the time, but it's there.
And do you ever do grief counselling?
I did, yes.
And did that work well for you?
It did, yes. You know, I'd done that for 6 years. We married her in Alton Gavin.
Yeah.
You know, and she doesn't call it counselling. She calls it psychology. So
okay,
she's like, I'm not a counsellor.
That sounds even more scary.
I'm a psychologist.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So, yes, Mary was fantastic. And there was a lot that I wouldn't have been able to do without Mary.
Brilliant.
You know.
Okay, that's good. Now, a book. You're working on a book, which I think is really interesting. How far into the project are you? Is it ready to publish? Are you just at the beginning?
Well, no, we're probably halfway through.
Yeah.
You know, so it's taken its toll to, you know, that's an emotional roller coaster, but some of it's good. It is a tearjerker. Obviously, it's about, you know, my experience of what happened that night.
How much leading up to it do you talk about it? How much, you know, do you set the scene? Do you start at that awful tragedy? Or
no,
do we learn
I don't.
More about
so,
your family? Or?
Yes, so it's about the boys. I want people to know who they were.
Yep.
I want their personalities to come across. I've also asked several of their friends to write a wee bit on about how they became to know them. And, you know, because for me, they have a voice too.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention the friends, isn't it? Because, again, that's another cohort of people that there has to be an explanation on a Monday or a Tuesday in school as to where their classmates
and
are, where
was,
their friends are.
That was a big thing for Evan and Mark's friends, you know, to go on to school the next day and them not be there, you know, not be at their desk, especially in primary school when they have the same wee chair.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And also, you know, I mean, obviously this is short format, so we can only learn so much about it. And in the book process, you can go into far more detail about your grief.
Yes.
About human resilience, which is astonishing. And I think your resilience is channeled through your daughter as well, too, isn't it? That's where it came from. And also to, you know, what we've talked about a little bit, like hope, the future, being happy at times and stuff. But it's not all roses, as you've been outlining. But
no.
I think for those that need to hear it, it's going to be very relatable.
Yeah. I mean, we do have to love as well. You know, obviously it wasn't my time to go and I'm here and I have to look after Raina. And who's better to tell her the stories about her brothers and her daddy and her granny and auntie than me? you know, nobody else can tell her them stories. So when we sit down to talk, she loves hearing stories. Mm-hmm. She loves hearing about them or where they've been or where we've been on holidays. She looks at photographs and she'll say to me, "No, tell me about this one."
Yeah.
You know, so it's nice to talk about them and it brings back your happy memories.
Yeah, of course it does. And it makes her know she's got a family.
Yeah.
It's not obviously traditional because it's not,
it's not normal.
Yeah, exactly. But
she knows that she belongs to something.
Exactly, precisely. Yeah. And she's part of a unit albeit. Yes. Which is amazing. Which is so, you know, they talk about this whenever there's an interview about a book. They say cathartic, right? You know, and often it's about working through something and you feel great after it. This is different, because obviously it's triggering some lovely memories and emotions, and I'm sort of laughed through tears doing some of it, but also too, you're really, even more so than you might in any interview like this, you're really having to get into how you felt and how it made you feel.
Yeah.
Has that been a benefit to you in the process, or is that another thing that you're having to work through a little bit that's making things harder for you?
No, because I talk about that all the time. Yeah, so, you know, when we're talking about it, you know, it affects you in so many different ways. And sometimes it unfolds something that you didn't know was there, you know, a feeling that was there. And we deal with it there and then.
And the book, when are you hoping for it to be published this year?
Oh, yeah, hopefully this year.
Brilliant. Okay. And are you working with someone on that?
I am, Julianne Campbell.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, so you're in safe hands.
Yeah, so Julianne's helping me. She's my ghostwriter, as you would say.
Yeah. But it's your story, but it's nice to have someone to help you structure it.
And it's an emotional roller coaster for her too.
I would say so. I would say so, because she's there with you in it, isn't it? Now, there is a Remembrance Mass that's taking place in the not-too-distant future. Talk to me about that.
So, having Mass. My voice is going again.
I think, you know what? It's held up really well, because when we began this, I was wondering, we get to 10 minutes, but here we are. No, you have another sup of coffee. Yes, the Remembrance Mass.
So that's going to take place on Friday the 20th of March, their anniversary. And that'll be in the Holy Family Chapel in Gorty.
And what tone is that? Are you going? Is that a straight up remembrance mass, or
an anniversary remembrance mass?
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Raina must be just the apple of your eye, the light in your heart, the absolutely everything. You can't spoil it too much either.
No,
right?
I don't. She gets told no a lot.
The people that were there on that day, I mentioned it a little bit earlier on, right? You know, the people that responded to it, the Coast Guard. There's so many different people involved. I suppose too, the book is an opportunity to give them a thanks as well, because I'm sure they appreciate.
Do you know what? That's the whole reason for me for me doing the interview, was to thank. As I said on Tommy Tiernan, I don't know them all individually, but this is my way of saying thank you to them. And as I said to them before, you know, my family might not have came home alive, but I got them home, and I got them home together. Mm. I was able to say my goodbyes to them, and I was able to let family and friends see them too. So for me, this is a thank you to David for saving Raina, along with her father, and to Connie and Teresa, but also to the guards, the Bunkrana Fire Service, the Fire Service in Derry also, the Nidoc, the Greencastle Coast Guard, the Rescue 118, the Mullenhead.
You should have wore your glasses, because I'm going to help you.
Yes.
Rescue 118, which do amazing work.
They
do. Cottage Connor, the Divisional Controller at Mullenhead Coast Guard, which is a really important part of bringing everything together. The ambulance services that responded to that, it was seen as a major incident, and all resources were thrown in that direction. And interestingly, undertakers.
Yes, and that's the big thing for me too.
Yeah, because, you know, no one wants to see them coming, okay?
But for me, that's,
they know how to treat you.
Yeah, and for me, it was, you know, I wanted to thank the undertakers, because, you know, they bring them home and in their wee, to let you see them, and in their wee personalities
and
who come through.
It's the sensitivity and respect with which they're treated. They're treated with the same love that you had for them. The Donegal County Council Marine Engineer as well. You wanted to thank. And Father John Walsh.
I've never actually met him, but yes, a thank you to him too. You know, and God rest Father Paddy. O'Kane, Father Paddy O'Kane. You know, God rest him. He had a lot to deal with that time too.
Yeah, indeed. And what's the future hold for you? Obviously, you've got the book. Are you into writing, or is this just something? Is this
definitely not.
But so, why is this so important to you then? I mean, you know, is it about paying tribute to all the people we mentioned? To pay tribute to your family?
Yeah.
To remember them?
To let
people understand that, not that anyone would, but it isn't a headline, that these are real people that were so important and
well,
so much.
That's part of it. The other part is it's for Raina. Because I'm not always going to be here. And hopefully one day she has a family of her own. And if they have questions, then it's there in a book.
And of course, there's a couple of major things coming up. We talked about the book, which will be released later in the year. There is a walk taking place as well, isn't there?
That is
in Buncrana.
On the 22nd of March at 11 o'clock. So if anybody wants to register, they can go online on Facebook or Instagram. And there is also a gala ball. And if they need tickets for that, tickets are available.
And that's in the Ebrington, and that coincides with your mum's...
That's on my mum's birthday, so that'll be Friday the 8th of May. Okay. And if there's any businesses out there that want to donate or sponsor a table, we would be more than happy to accept.
Stuff. And is that a fundraiser?
It is. So all the money that I raise is going to, the majority of it is going to the RNLI, but some of it is going to the fire service and the Coast Guard as well.
That's fantastic. Okay, so we'll link all of the information under this post. Don't forget the walk on the 22nd of March. And then that wonderful gala ball on your mummy's birthday in the Ebrington Hotel in Maine.
Yeah.
Okay, listen.
Thank you.
Louise James, thank you so much for calling down and chatting to us. We really do appreciate it. And keep an eye out for that book, because I've no doubt, firstly, it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for us to learn more about your lovely family that you so sadly lost. But also, too, there'll be lessons in there for dealing with very difficult times.
Yeah.
And a thank you, a big thank you once again to Louise. What an astonishing woman. And, you know, that was just us having a chat, and there was pauses for Louise to have a sup of coffee, but it was real, and that's the way I wanted you to hear it, as it was real. Just to remind you, and this is an opportunity, and I'm not sure if we spoke during the podcast or off air, for people who were affected by that at that time and maybe have sort of bottled it up, there's a remembrance mass taking place in the Holy Family Parish in Ballymacroarty in Derry on Friday the 20th at 7 p.m. Everybody is welcome. As I mentioned, to mark the 10th anniversary, Louise James is organising a series of fundraisers, including a 5K walk on March 22nd. That is in Buncrana. The walk will begin at the Play Park in Buncrana, where Mark, Evan and Jodie were last seen playing, and will continue out towards Ned's Point. It's a walk of reflection, remembrance and togetherness. A contribution of £10 per person or £25 per family for is kindly suggested. And also there is that gala ball that is taking place in the Ebrington Hotel in Derry on Friday 8th of May. Inquiries in relation to that ball or anything for that matter, rememberme.life05@gmail.com. But contact us if you need any further information. And there's only a couple of audio-visual interviews that Louise decided to do, and we were honoured that she chose to have a chat to us.
Business Matters is proudly sponsored by Print Supplies Frosses. With 21 years in business, Print Supplies provides managed print solutions with local support and remote ink monitoring, saving your business time and money. Print Supplies, your local printer and photocopier company.
That means Chris Ashmore's in studio. Chris, how are you doing?
Very well, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Right, we'll get straight into the podcast and then backtrack dependent on time, because the podcast is what is important. It's the Business Matters podcast from Highland Radio. It's released for you every... Do we release it on a Thursday now or Wednesday?
Yeah, on a Thursday.
Thursday, so it's released for every single Thursday. And what's coming up on the podcast this week, Chris?
Well, this week I've been speaking to Galway native Martine Kelly, who many people may know from his Kelly's Mountaintop Central store in Letterkenny, which he sold back in 2024. So I've been catching up on what he's been doing since. Effectively, he's been developing a career as a consultant and strategic advisor, using his expertise and experience, particularly for those in the retail trade, and talking to businesses about how they can overcome the many challenges that they may face. He's great experience in this sector, and indeed using everything from your leadership to communications and all sorts of things. And interestingly, he is very much focused on AI, and you may be, of course, there was the robot across the road, which was one of the first in the country in a restaurant. And we have a clip about just him talking about AI and in particular how it's going to impact on retail.
I think choice is going to be a big thing. Yes, AI is going to play a big part. I see it even in terms of something that the Musgrave's group is rolling out at the moment. Supervising Centre is a project called POP. It's not actually a project that's coming into the stores. We're basically, the AI will generate an order. So no longer will it be time spent placing orders. But then that time can be reallocated to improving standards. It can be reallocated to customer service. It can be reallocated to marketing. So definitely AI is going to improve efficiencies. It has to, I think it'll maintain profitability. I don't think it'll grow profitability. I think it'll maintain profitability because costs are going to continue to rise. Yeah. So AI is absolutely a necessity.
Interesting conversation, I've no doubt, because sometimes people go into consultancy and they don't really necessarily, they don't have a proven track record in their area of expertise. It does happen, particularly in the area of social media and influencing, but he's been there and done that and built a massive company. So I'm sure he's going to be incredibly busy, Chris.
Absolutely. And, you know, he started off in his native Ballinasloe in a shop there. He's worked around the country in several shops, and of course, great changes over that time. And in the podcast, you'll hear also about in shops, of course, you've got the self-serve desks and the more traditional one with a human being serving you. And I think he refers to, I think it might have been in Denmark, that, you know, they call it the slow checkout, and that you can put different names on it. And of course, particularly there may be people in a rural area or older people who still want, of course, that human interaction as well.
Lots of people do, and the clever supermarkets in other countries recognise that and have different lanes. I tried to go to the Tesco Christmas party. They wouldn't let me in. I was like, well, I've been working here all year. Right, Chris, that podcast is available very, very shortly. Yeah. And I meant working there, scanning my own stuff. That podcast is available very, very shortly, right, for people to listen at their leisure, but also available as a show on Sunday.
That's right. We are broadcast after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday.
And if anyone wishes to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do so?
Best way is by email. The email address is businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
See you next week, Chris.
Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day.